Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances. We're talking about personal finance and career advice doesn't suck.
Yes, sir. Today's episode is brought to you by PNB Premium on Patreon. This is offering our new listeners that want to receive early access to ad-free episodes, show extras, including bonus content, and discounts on merch in our soon-to-launch online store. You can learn more and support the show by visiting paybal.co/patron. That's paybal.co/patron, spelled like Patron, but we're not sponsoring Patron.
Yeah, definitely not. Happily take that in the future, though. So other than sharing new episodes, this is by far the best way to support the podcast. So if you've been listening for a while and found the show helpful, we encourage you to visit paybal.co/patron. And yeah, check it out. See if it makes sense. And we hope we'll have you on board. And we actually have some stuff that we're going to be sharing there pretty soon that we're not going to publish elsewhere. So today's episode is the first of two parts. We did one of our throwback long recordings, if you were with us back in the TGOS days, and wanted to make this one an easy listen. So what are we talking about on part one, brother?
So we're hitting the personal finance tip. I've made my way through 10 now of the 15 personal finance books I set out to read in 2018. And I thought this would be a good time to share the lessons learned, you know, share the wealth, if you will.
Indeed, indeed. And I realized I kind of bumbled through that. And I think I said, so what are we talking about? Like, no, not like Rihanna. That's just we. Anyway,
she can talk about us, too, if she would like to.
And also, you might notice a difference in sound quality since we recorded via two different pieces of software. The new software is what we're on now. The episode that you're hearing was on the previous version of that. You'll notice better audio quality going forward. With that said, let's get on to the show. So what we got today, man?
Well, you know, in continuing progress, you know, I don't want to be a hypocrite. So even progressing on myself, I'm going to stop lying to the people about the Money Minute. And I'm going to go ahead and just rebrand this segment, Money on My Mind, which is both still accurate and gives me more time to work with than the Money Minute, in which I never stuck to anyway. So I was going to bust into like a little Lil Wayne freestyle, but I realized that song came out in like 96 and probably half our listeners weren't born at that time. So I'm not even going to depress myself with that information. I just got money on my mind. And I wanted to talk a little bit about money management in your 20s, 30s, and 40s as it relates to money on my mind. I'm more than halfway through my goal of reading, reviewing 15 personal finance books this year, 2018. So you don't have to. You can find that at paychecksandbalances.com/books if you have not already, because I'm always like pandering to it. And in no particular order, I have finished The Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey, Do's and Don'ts of Money by Suze Orman, Dollars and Cents by Dan Ariely. And Jeff Chrysler.
Yeah, I just let that hang out there. I was like, I have no idea.
He's actually given us a couple retweets, and we actually got his book from the publisher reaching out to us. So I would like to pronounce it correctly. And if I have not, Mr. Dan, I appreciate the retweets, and I apologize for getting your name wrong.
Can't listen to the show.
The Millionaire Next Door by Thomas Stanley. Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki.
Sure,
I'm roll with it. I'm just going to roll right through this. Automatic Millionaire by David Bach. I Will Teach You to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi. I know I'm saying his name incorrectly, but I think I got the first name right.
Yeah,
because I think I heard.
Yeah,
I finally heard somebody else say it right.
So. Yeah, so Ramit, and it's either Sethi or Sethi. And I only know that from, well, I won't go into the story of how I know that, because then, just keep it moving.
I will. Your Money or Your Life by Vicky Robin, Joe Dominguez, and Monique Tilford, and The Two Income Trap, my most recent read, and one that I would actually recommend. I don't see it on many money reads, and it should be. I actually found it due to a documentary I saw on YouTube, tried to find on Netflix, but it talks about The Two Income Trap by Senator now Elizabeth Warren and former author Elizabeth Warren, although I'm sure she'll write some more books. This one was actually, what's it called, refreshed for the 2016s?
I forget. Revised? I don't know.
Revised sounds about right. Yeah, but it's actually a really good read and read a lot quicker than I would have expected, because I think she's like a former Harvard professor and I had my hesitations, but it's a lot of good information. Hesitations in that I wouldn't be able to keep up, but it's plain speak, well written, and I'm going to talk a little bit about why I speak so highly about that book. So any thoughts or comments on any of these that you may have read, sir?
I did want to comment like, yo, you don't read a lot of books, man. You've like really stuck with it.
I will say two things, so or maybe three things. So one, I I'm a Trivial Pursuit information collector. So one of these I got, I don't know if I got it from a meme, I read a book, I read a blog, but it was talking about the 2 minute exercise, where anything that takes 2 minutes, you should do immediately as far as your priorities go, because it'll help you break out of the cycle of procrastination. And generally the biggest part of procrastination is not starting. So I'll look either something more reputable than where I saw it, or I'll pull that up and get that in the show notes. But it's actually been very helpful to me as far as sticking to goals and ensuring that I hit priorities, and especially things that I would normally put off just because I don't want to get to them, although they don't take a lot of time once I start. Mm. I spend 58 minutes avoiding doing a 2 minute activity. And so that 2 minute exercise really helps you break out of that.
Yeah, I've definitely let 2 minute tasks become like an hour long chore because I just let them pile up. When I very easily could have addressed them, I'm like, I could do this now. And then I end up with a list of 10 to 15 small tasks that I'm doing one after the other. Actually, you know what? As I say that, that's not really a bad thing, man. I think that goes with the idea when people batch tasks, where you save a bunch of little things to a particular time. And I think that's worked for me, because when I have to jump from task to task and those tasks are drastically different from each other, my brain gets burned out quick fast.
Yeah, I saw something else recently. That's actually very true, that the brain isn't designed to be as hyperactive as we now force upon it with all the multitasking and social media and all the things available to it. And so it is good to give yourself, like when you literally feel that burnout, that's an actual physical reaction to a real thing that is happening. Your brain is like overwhelmed. So that's also something I've been trying to do better at, is, like you said, batch time, or more proactive and purposeful with the time that I do have available. And yeah, it has paid off. As it pertains to this, that actually came from Lisa Nicole Bell, and I'll get that in the show notes, Behind the Brilliance. But she talked about reading 10 pages a day, or reading for 10 minutes a day, which for me is about 10 pages a day. And it has paid off. Like I'll either do two things now. I'll read 10 minutes. I'll just start reading for 10 minutes, or I'll 10 pages. And generally what I find is, if I already get 10 pages in, it's a lot easier to flip through the 11th, 12th, 13th, 50th page. And all of a sudden an hour has passed anyway.
Yeah, that's like building momentum.
Right. I would have spent that time sitting around, binging on Netflix, scrolling through Twitter, and really doing a number of things that would not do anything to benefit me tomorrow or make me a better person next day, next week, next year, whatever the case may be. So that's actually been a very helpful exercise for me. In combination with those two, I've been able to work my way through these books. And then if that doesn't work, usually it's just, like I said, getting started. So I'll just start. I'll pick a weekend, usually typically Sunday, and I'll just start reading. And then before I know it, I've gotten well into these books anyway.
That's definitely a good way to go about it, man. I need to read more. And so from this list, I've read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I was probably in high school and too consumed with things that don't matter in life to really appreciate it. And then I also read I Will Teach You to Be Rich. I probably read that one probably 5 or 6 years ago. And the one theme I do notice with the books that I have read is that they ultimately come back to mindset and how you see money, and even this idea of getting money to work from you. So, of course, there's the formulaic component as well. But the theme between the ones I've read has definitely been the flip in mindset.
Yeah. And I read The Millionaire Next Door in high school, and it definitely didn't have the impact or impression on it that it did when I read it this time around. So I'm glad I read it a second time. And I'm glad I'm reading all these books together, because it's given me a more well-rounded perspective in this case as it relates to personal finance, but just period. So for folks that have read a book, I'd say 5 years ago, but sometimes even just 1 or 2 years ago, you might want to give it another read, especially as it relates to something as static or objective as finances or something to that effect now. And so don't feel that you can't reread these books. But if you have, I welcome you to jump in the comments, because it'd be something I want to hear about. And I've heard people talking about it in the Facebook group at Paychecks and Balances. So because for those people keeping track at home, that would get me to book number 10. I thought this would be a good time to review the list as I work my way through the next five and talk a little bit about my favorites. And I really want to drive home, although I want to be inclusive to everybody, participation trophies all around, what I wish I knew about money in my 20s, and looking ahead, what I hope to know in my 40s. For those of you who just arrived, I am 35. And as I was arguing with somebody yesterday, I am a Scorpio. I don't know why they were arguing with me about my own birthday. They were trying to tell me that November 3rd is not a Scorpio. They were convinced that Scorpios don't exist in November.
I hate when people try and tell you stuff about yourself, and you're like, how are you telling me? Like, yo, you're like a Capricorn. You know, like, what? You don't even know my life. You don't even know me.
The most upsetting part about the conversation was they asked me my zodiac, and I said, "Oh, I'm Scorpio." And they say, "Okay, what part?" I think they said like December or something like that. I'm like, "No, November." And then they told me I was wrong. I was like, "Yo, you asked me my sign, which means you probably opened up to like, oh yeah, your moon is in regression. Like, why would you start a zodiac sign? Yeah, why would you start the conversation if you are not prepared and equipped?" Then they're gonna tell me, "Oh yeah, well I know the earlier half of the year." I'm like, "There's only 12." Anyway, the conversation deteriorated from there, as you might imagine. So I'll start with the informative news. I don't know if it's bad, dude. So I have not found a get-rich-quick scheme yet, despite my ability my inability to sell knives door-to-door. Shout out to Cutco, still out there scamming in the streets. You know, shout out to the scammers.
But everybody got to earn a living somehow, bro.
Hey, man, you know what? The fact that they are still around says something about them and something about me as well, but probably more about them than me. For example, like even if you made, let's say you break that six-figure threshold, you make $100,000 a year. And so that's going to be about $8,300 a month. And let's say you, I don't know, you're a dink. You're a dual income, no kids. I was not sure if I was going to be ready to walk through that. And somehow you live on one of those incomes. Oh. I'm gonna talk a little bit about that, about the two-parent income trap. You would still have to wait 8 years at a 7% return to break $1 million. So if you had a 7% return, investing every single dollar of your six-figure income, and you did well, even if you did 10%, it would still take 8 years. So 8 years isn't long. Well, I guess it depends on your perspective, but it's still 8 years. It's not like what I would qualify as a get-rich-quick scheme.
Yeah.
And I kind of open with that. I wanted to say president, but I know that's not the way you say the word. So I'm going to open with that to transition to my next part of the conversation, because I don't know what that word is that is in my head.
Precedent?
That's what happens. There we go. That's what happens when you read a bunch of books and you see the word, but you have never had to say it out loud till you're speaking on the podcast.
Yeah, so you just reminded me of the word facade, that when you see it written, it looks like facade. And for years, I would read and say facade. And then one time I think I was reading it out loud and said facade, and someone was like, "For what?" And I'm like, "Facade." They're like, facade?
I'm pretty sure that someone was me, and I'm pretty sure that happened on one of our like original podcasts, by the way.
So, I definitely remember messing it up, man.
This is the Phantom Flashback Zone. So my quick breakdown of the top five, but I'm going to break it into a couple different categories, you know, to talk about like where I think these would resonate most. So if you limited me to one book so far, I'm 10 into the 15. I would still go with The Millionaire Next Door. It's an oldie, but a goodie. An oldie, I think it was still written in the 90s. But so if you were limited to one, I'd say The Millionaire Next Door.
Why so?
If you gave me, I feel that it most accurately paints the picture of how to build wealth in the U.S. And I walk through that very purposely because that's kind of the focus of the book. And it shows that if you do it purposefully, and I mean like starting from almost age 18 or 20, you can build and become the millionaire next door within your lifetime. What I think will be interesting because of the period of the book that was studied is, will it hold true? I believe it has held up well through the test of time since it's been published, but will that still be true in 10, 20 more years if interest rates continue to fall, if inflation rises? Will this generation still have that availability or ability to build up to $1 million in wealth, at least was the threshold for this book, within their lifetime? So roughly 40 to 50 year working career period.
Mm.
But for now, I still think that is the best book for telling that story.
You know, every time I hear this title I've never read the book, but it always makes me think of the people. And I work with a lot of people like this where I know they make good money. I mean, there's people that I've hired in, so I know what they make, and they'll drive like an old beat up car. And so does that book get into that at all? Or like, cause I've always wondered, like, why do I associate that? Like every time I hear Millionaire Next Door, I always think of the unassuming person driving the beat up car who's actually wealthy as hell.
That's actually exactly what it talks about. And that's the extended subtitle of it is The Millionaire Next Door, The Surprising Secrets of America's Wealthy. And yeah, that's what it talks about is most quote unquote millionaires next door don't look like millionaires on TV.
Yeah.
And they said they point. Yeah. And actually the exact quote from the book is many people who live in expensive homes and drive luxury cars do not actually have wealth. And so they separate between making a lot of money, which they actually say is easier to do than to build wealth. So you can, like I said, in that scenario, you can make $100,000 a year, but if you spend $99,000 of it, you are not wealthy. You make a lot of money. And they kind of differentiate and paint that picture of what it looked like to both make money and build wealth. So that goes back to that 8-year period I'm talking about where, you know, that's, yeah, I guess on your perspective, that's 2 college terms. you're going to graduate school. I mean, you can ban that from PhD, high school to college. Done. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, 8 years isn't slow. I don't think anyone would describe it as short, but considering that most people work their entire lives, which encompasses 40 or 50 years of a working career and never become millionaires, I still think 8 years is very quick when you look at it on that lengthy scale. And then it goes on to say many people who have a great deal of wealth do not even live in upscale neighborhoods. Wealth is often the result of a lifestyle of hard work, perseverance, planning, and most importantly, self-discipline.
So what do you say to people who are like, well, what about circumstance? Because we've seen that come up before. Where it's like, yo, if you apply these steps and you work hard, it's like, well, you know, I've had the world stacked against me, or I've had the chips stacked against me, and I know other people have the chips stacked against them, so they don't have that opportunity.
Well, I think we're talking, and I think those individuals may be talking about two things, in which that is typically mobility. So mobility, especially in the US, but arguably around the world, is difficult. Mobility is how well or easily you can move up in income relative to your peers and colleagues or whomever that may be. So if you start off, and it is still true, the greatest probability of wealth building the greatest probability of wealth building is where and how much you make when you were born. It's actually more telling by probability wise how successful you would be if you were born into wealth. People born into wealth tend to stay wealthy. People born into poverty tend to stay in poverty. People born into the middle class actually tend to fall out of the middle class into poverty over, and there are several other demographics that you look at about telling that story. Very few actually move from middle class to upper middle class up into wealth. So to me, that's mobility. Mobility, especially holistically, is difficult. And Tila talked about that a little bit in her relation to the stock market, where she said the stock market is like a crowd of individuals, you know, moving together at a concert. She said, and most people focus on individual stocks. The stock market moves when everyone moves. So it's very difficult for you to move individually because everyone in the crowd sees the crowd moves. They're like, oh, we got to go left because everyone's going left. And you look weird going right, even if right is the right decision to make. Yeah. So I think what the millionaire next door breaks out is to say that, well, if you look at everybody, the average household has, and we go through this every, you know, jump time, $16,000 in credit card debt. I think mortgage rates are somewhere to $200,000 to $300,000 on average. And so you don't want to be average. And I believe this book says if you want to be different, it actually points out that you have to make a lifetime sacrifice of being different, not temporary. In this scenario, not even 8 years, but over a 40 to 50 year period, even with what you pointed out, if you follow these steps, you as an individual will be wealthy. Then the question becomes, as far as mobility goes, well, if I as an individual build wealth, what about my friends and what about my family? I believe we had someone else on the show that talked about being first generation. And this is a very real thing that some people just cannot relate to. You are expected to take care of your brother, your sister, your family as they get elderly. And so it does become increasingly difficult for an individual to build wealth when they are the first individual in a family to build wealth. And then we now start to extrapolate into why it's so difficult to move up generationally across a number of demographics. But the math for an individual building wealth for themselves, in this instance defined as 1 million, can be done if that individual, with all these factors and issues and characteristics that may be facing them, I would call them, I describe this as like headwinds. So using the airplane in this metaphor. So some people have tailwinds. Everything or a lot of things is benefiting them, so they get there faster. But if the argument is, can you get there, period, even with these headwinds, which are unfair and I acknowledge and do exist, the answer is still yes. You will both arrive. the other individual will arrive there faster. And as a result, because they arrive there faster and compound interest and history and all kinds of things that we can go into details probably on another show, they will have greater benefit because that's just how money works. Money makes more money.
Yeah, makes sense. Good answer.
And that's why if you gave me two books, I would actually, I think the most holistic story that I've read of where we are going and why so many are stuck, if not stagnated, is The Millionaire Next Door and The Two Income Trap, which is why I'm surprised The Two Income Trap. Well, actually, I'm not surprised. I think I have some thoughts on why, but that would, I had to go into conspiracy land, which will be my spinoff podcast that I'll do when I'm financially secure and I can share my real thoughts.
But you're now listening to The Swindle Podcast.
Exactly. Let me tell you about the man. But the thing is, I think these two books tell the most holistic story. The Two Income Trap tells the best example of, and I just quote from the book. If current trends continue by the end of this decade, 1 in 7 children in the U.S. will have lived through their parents' bankruptcy. So why does that matter? And even any given year, more children will live through their parents' bankruptcy than divorce. Yet which topic dominates the headline?
Divorce.
So that's my point, where people focus their energy while still important, and I'm not diminishing the role and the painfulness of anyone that has or are dealing or knows someone that's gone through divorce, more people are impacted by what you spoke to, the limitation of wealth, the inability to be mobile and mobile, both in the United States financially, independently, personally, professionally, as a family, as a generation, is still true. And more people are actually impacted by that. But that's not what dominate headlines, because I think we could speak to why. I don't think it would actually take a wild guess, but the people who control the headlines tend to be pretty wealthy themselves. So of course, why would they want to tell that story? They would like to maintain the illusion that you just got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, bro.
Oh, you mean like the entrepreneur who talks about the struggle when it turns out that their first business was funded at $500K by their father and his friends?
That's correct. And the average...
No shade. That's real talk. No shade.
Another quote from that book, and there's a lot that this will be, by the time this comes out, this post will be written, but it'll be my most recent review. The average two-income family earns more today than the single-income household of a generation ago. But once all bills, mortgage, car payment, taxes, health insurance, for example, in a two-income household of today's family has been paid, they have less discretionary income than a single family of a generation ago. Stated simply, that means one person could have supported a household a generation ago and still had more money available as a percentage of their income than two people working in 2018.
Okay, so making sure I got this. So a single income household, so it could still be a family, but one person is the breadwinner of all things versus a household where both people, adults, parents, whatever they are bringing in money.
That's correct.
Cool. Got it.
And that book unpackages kind of the why behind that, which is why I'm surprised it's not on more personal finance reading lists, because a lot of them just talk about, and actually she speaks to this in the book, they just talk about, oh, all you need to do is put a budget together and cut back on your expenses, and then you're on your way to wealth, buddy. And it's like, no.
Nope.
that is, I guess, let me put it this way. That is mathematically accurate, but divorced from reality. So, yes, mathematically, someone can just put 10% of a single household median income is $30,000. They put 10% before taxes into a 401k, assuming they have access to a 401k, which for some reason people always assume, and I think only like 1 in 3 have access to a 401k. But let's assume for the case of this scenario, they had access to it. And they would have to do that for 30 years. So who among us, cast the first stone, knows that they'll be able to allocate $300 for the next 30 years of their life every month, uninterrupted, and get 7% returns? Like,
yeah.
No one is that psychic, and most people are adapting to a reality of day to day. And if they're lucky, you actually have to be fortunate. And I think this actually only puts you in the 70% where you are living the paycheck to paycheck. Most people are just trying to live day to day. And that includes in America. That's not like across the world and like what you see in the infomercials. Now I'm talking about in the continental United States.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically most people are trying to pay the bills and have a little bit left to have some fun.
If they're lucky. Yes.
If they're lucky.
And even that puts them in a fortunate position above millions. But that would be another topic for another show. And if you're under 35 and want to get better with money, I'd recommend The Automatic Millionaire and I Will Teach You to Be Rich for two reasons, because I believe these two books give you explicit instructions. And I think that would just do well generationally with people like ourselves. I guess I don't even have to give a demographic example. I think our generation is like, where do I put the mouse and double click? I don't want to talk about conceptually and yes, my feelings, and I don't talk about, just cut back on bills. Like, what site do I go to? What app do I download? And then when I open that app, which color button am I looking to push? And The Automatic Millionaire and I Will Teach You to Be Rich, I feel, are probably the better, if not the best books that I've read to date at giving you explicit advice like that. They move from concepts to call to action item that if you did today, you would be better off financially tomorrow.
I need to dig I Will Teach You to Be Rich out of the box that it's been in since I moved almost a year ago and read that over again, because I remember it being good and I'm hearing this now and I'm like, I could probably use that refresher, even though there's some things that, I know that I'm doing right. There's always things that I or we could be doing better. So I might make that the first one that I revisit.
Yeah, I'm glad I could inspire, brother. Glad I could inspire. And if you're over 35 and want to get better with money, I would recommend The Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey and The Do's and Don'ts of Money, at least as far as the first two that I've read, because I think they still offer good advice. I actually thought The Do's and Don'ts of Money was more explicit than The Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey, even though I think Dave Ramsey's book is more well known. There are probably various reasons for that. But as far as practical advice that you can start doing tomorrow, I actually would recommend The Do's and Don'ts of Money by Suze Orman. And she has a bunch of DVDs and things that accompany it as well. But I just got the book. Actually, someone gave me the book. Actually, that someone was my mother. So shout out to my mom who listens to the podcast from time to time. And shout out to you. Thank you for that information. Good read.
I can see your mom listening, or imagine her listening and being like, someone, I'm your mother. Now, I've never heard your mother talk, really. But I'm imagining it would be some version of that when she sends you a text or calls you while still listening to the episode.
My mom actually sent me an emoji the other day. I was so shocked and appalled. That's like the third one she sent me in 35 years. But it was actually well-purposed. So hopefully this will be the appropriate emoji, because I think I nailed it there. So shout out to moms for sending me The Do's and Don'ts of Money by Suze Orman. I am a more well-rounded personal finance individual for it.
There you go.
And so if you just want to conceptually improve your money mindset and how you view money, work-life balance, I would then recommend Your Money or Your Life by Vicky Robin. Quote from that book that I'll share is, we are called to be architects of the future, not its victims. Less than half of Americans are satisfied with their jobs. We are working more, but enjoying less. And so the book then, through 9 chapters, walks through the theme of answering and asking yourself a simple question. If you didn't have to work for a living, what would you do with your time?
Man.
And if you can't, or you have never answered that question, you will always trade time for money. This is from me, but my summary of the book, because that's all you have been taught is your purpose. But please know that there is way more to life than working until you die, because working until you die is not a retirement plan.
Say that again.
And then from Rich Dad, Poor Dad, money is not taught in school. Schools focus on scholastic and professional skills, not finances. Children spend years in an antiquated educational system studying subjects they will never use, preparing for a world that no longer exists.
There's a lot of truth in that, especially now that I'm at the age that I can actually appreciate this.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I liked Rich Dad, Poor Dad. The only reason I didn't put it higher is, like some individuals, I did think it was not explicit, but it was maybe blunt's the word I'm looking for. It was a lot of do this and you will become wealthy. And I think we know, and maybe even the author would acknowledge, and I think he does throughout the book, that it's not that simple. So again, I think it goes back to, there is math and then there is reality. And I feel like some of these books, not saying that this is the only one that does this, fall short of, well, the math says, and I always say this, if it was that easy, or if it was easy, period, everyone would do it. You don't have to force people to do the easy things.
When I read it, it was also while I had friends who had joined the Cutco cult. And I remember reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it covering a lot about multi-level marketing, which I think turned me off at the time. So was that your experience, or am I crazy on that part?
No, I don't remember that for Rich Dad, Poor Dad. He more or less focuses on building assets. So he takes a financial independence approach without really calling it financial independence, and that you build up your asset column, as he calls it, so that your assets pay for your lifestyle, which is pretty much the moniker of financial independence now. But he doesn't really call it that in his book. So, for example, he uses real estate, 401k, using money to make money work for you so that it can then pay for and cover your lifestyle. And as Paul LePant talked about on our show, it's growing that gap between your expenses and your investments. But I think, again, the problem is probably what's most least acknowledged in a lot of these books is you have to get to a point where you have the ability to grow the gap between assets and income. And what I thought the Two Income Parent Trap points out is most people don't even have that. Like, we live in a reality, not universally, that's another thing to keep in mind, but there's definitely cost of living implications and significant areas and swaths that impact millions of people in the United States where there is no gap between income. If anything, that gap is negative, or in the red, where their expenses exceed their income, which is why we have the credit card debt. And I think it's easier, the two income trap finds the fallacy in this. It's easier to say, well, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps, just come up with a budget, just do A, B, C, X, Y, Z, and then you will be financially independent and wealthy, without acknowledging that that period of time for most individuals will be their entire lives, if they're fortunate. So you're telling somebody at 20 that maybe if you follow this path, at the end of that rainbow, there will be gold, allegedly, maybe. I can't prove it, but I have this math right here that says if you trust me, believe me, 50 years from now by doing this. And then without acknowledging the people that you're telling that story have seen, off the top of my head, Enron crash, the stock market crash, the tech bubble blow, the housing bubble blow, Lehman Brothers crash, GM file for bankruptcy, MCI. Go under for fraudulent activities. Like, you need more people. Like, we don't believe you. We've seen too many things implode by smart people with glasses and quote unquote experts. I don't know if they were lying, but they were wrong. And that's just in the 35 years I've been alive, off the 35 seconds that I can remember off the top of my head. And so, what I will say is something I did hear recently that I do like is, while you cannot predict the future, you can prepare for multiple outcomes. And I think that's something that millennials can buy into, and I still believe is accurate. And I don't really think folks can argue with that. But this one size fits all, do it my way, highway or whatever, and it will work because it is flawless. And, you know, I am all and all knowing. And one other thing that I try to focus on reading books from people who are wealthy themselves instead of someone who has written a book about the concept. And actually, The Millionaire Next Door talks about that. There's a lot of financial planners. There's a lot of stockbrokers who are themselves in debt, who are themselves broke. And they have access to all the information. They know all the flaws. They have all the spreadsheets. And so, again, if it was easy, it would already be done. This game of life is clearly complicated.
I want to read a book or hear from somebody that got wealthy in a way other than the book that I'm reading by them about getting wealthy. Because there are those people where it's like, let me teach you how to be rich. Even though you reading this book and me getting people to buy this book is how I made all my money, I tend to gravitate toward people where they built their money another way and then wrote about it later on, versus like, I'm telling you now how to make money, even though like you are becoming the money that I'm making.
Yeah, and I'll briefly speak to this, and I don't disagree with you, but I think you have to be, or individuals have to be cautious, which is why I just try to inform myself. That's actually why I'm going through this journey of reading all these books, is I saw, no shade, you know, I respect the hustle. There's actually somebody who did a video of this, but Pitbull is giving real estate advice, and that's cool.
Pitbull?
You know, yeah, Pitbull is like hosting conferences where he gives real estate advice. And unless Pitbull, and I don't even know Pitbull's real name unless it is Pitbull. But that being said, I'm pretty sure he wasn't a real estate guru before he made millions being a rapper. And going back to my original statement that it's easy to make money or more money when you already have money or the capital or assets or millions to waste. But for Pitbull to sit up on the stage and give me real estate advice, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So I bring that up because, well, you have a lot of individuals that already have money and then they talk about other ways to make money. I'm like, you started with money.
Yeah.
So the starting point was the money, not the things you learned after you were already rich and had this network of other rich friends and their network and network and network and network, like the network. That's where I'm kind of like, I guess, you know, I respect the hustle, but I don't think it works like that. Like,
yeah,
you got wealthy from another avenue. What I like to call it is a repeatable system. A lot of people get wealthy from a system that's not repeatable. They're a talented artist. And I'm not knocking that. They're a talented artist. You know, they should be paid whatever they want to be paid, or the market dictates it.
Or athletes, but that's not
that's not a repeatable system. And then they talk about it as if it is. They're like, well, you know, when I started making millions in real estate, I'm like, you made 1,000 millions as a basketball player. Well, you know, when I opened up my dealership, I'm like, you opened up that dealership with the hundreds of millions you made playing football. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my mini rants on that particular topic.
I'm right there with you, man. That's why I said that. That's part of, I feel like I baited you into that one. That's my bad.
Well, I feel like, despite all that, self-education and time do have an invaluable value as well. Someone's talking about this as well. If you can't measure it in money, measure it in time. And time is more valuable than money because it cannot be replaced. And I think most people discount that.
All right. So we're going to break it here until next week, where we keep the conversation going. So if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to share with your network and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts. Today's review of the week comes from C Money NYC, and the title, "You Guys Are Hilarious, But More Importantly, Relatable." Well, I guess that's not also part of the title, but anyway. Millennial woman here who loves this ish. I get all your references, even the salt and pepper ones.
Thank you.
And I laugh out loud when I'm listening in the morning while getting ready. Thank you for increasing my money knowledge while also keeping it real. Mad love, fam.
Hey, UC Money. Get the bag and fumble it. I get the bag, flip it and tumble it. I appreciate that 5-star. And I more importantly appreciate the representation and recognition. Salt and pepper.
So hashtag leave it in.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. I shoot that shot. I'm glad it was off the board and into the rim. All bank. On part 2, we're actually talk about our money mistakes in our 20s, 30s, and what we plan to avoid in our 40s. I'm going to drop a hashtag quick plug. So I, as y'all know, hopefully, I write for GBR, that's Go Banking Rates, and that gets picked up every now and then by Yahoo Finance and their various partnerships. And one that has done extremely well, if you haven't found your way over to it in the interwebs, I don't know what viral is anymore, but it is truly in the hundred thousands of page views, blowing out the water. So I appreciate y'all, all those that have already shown those clicks, but you can visit paychecksandbalances.com/GBR. Or if you want to go directly to this specific article, it is how far a $500,000 nest egg will last in my state, the great state of Texas, and yours. I provide a breakdown of how much money you would need to save each month, ranging from 20 to 45. If you'd like to reach 500,000, you can double those numbers a little bit. I'll give you the calculator. It's in the show notes for if you'd like to get to a million. But 500,000, for example, at age 25, those youngsters out there, salute to you. That's just $181 a month. That's it. Little pocket change. Ain't nothing but a J a month. However, if you wait to age 45, it jumps to $851 a month. So moral of the story, and I have the breakdown for the entire range if you go to the article, is start early, be consistent.
Yes. Yo, man, you've been on fire with these articles, man.
Hey, you know, shout out to the good folks at GBR, you know, and I actually do get paid by them in all full disclosure and transparency. So shout out to them for reaching out to me. And I believe hopefully that is a appreciated opportunity on both sides.
Side hustling, staying true to the word.
Yes, sir.
And so if you'd like to find us on social, we're on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. You can follow our individual accounts, Marcus at the Marcus Garrett with one T on, fill it in, bro. It's the first time I'm reading this part.
One T on Twitter, two T's everywhere else on earth. Rich is available at I Am Rich Jones. We did throw the order off, so I know that I can see why, you know, it's different out there in the streets.
So at I Am Rich Jones for myself, I am. Also, don't forget to join our email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email, where you'll receive our weekly newsletter covering actionable work and money tips and much more. And so we want to thank everyone for listening. Hope you'll be back with us next week for part two. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.